Okay, this Torah portion this week is called Korach, which is Korah, and it talks about leadership. So I guess I'm going to talk about leadership today. And what does it mean to be called by God? What makes a good leader? These questions need to be answered to understand biblical leadership. We could sometimes recognize bad leadership when we see it, and many of us have been hurt in some way by bad leadership over the years, I'm sure. So how can we recognize and develop true biblical leadership? By looking at the contrast between Korach in this portion and Moses. We can come to an understanding of what a divinely led and empowered biblical leader is and what a leader isn't. What was Korach? Korach was a very skilled politician. He was patient and manipulative, and he waited until the proper time to make his move. He was the son of Levi, just as Aaron, yet the priesthood passed him by because he was not Aaron's son. Leadership in his own clan did not fall upon his shoulders. He was frustrated that people did not give him what he thought was his due. Quite likely, he was going through the camp encouraging the complaining that was going on. He solely built his coalition of respected men. When the time was right, he made a grab for power. At this time, the people were discouraged. They had just been defeated in their vain attempt to enter the land in defiance of Moses. You remember last week, the spies? They had been condemned to wander for 40 years in the desert till the generation of faithless men died. They wanted another alternative. I mean, God's plan was not for them. They wanted another plan. They wanted someone to tell them they didn't have to shoulder the consequences of their rebellion against God. They wanted to hear that everything was going to be okay. That they wouldn't have to wait. That the good times were just around the corner. They wanted someone to tell them that they should just follow me instead of him. What was Korach's pitch? Here's the guy, man. Used car salesman, probably. He stressed the equality of all. The whole assembly was holy. They all, every one of y'all, had the right to make a decision to determine your direction. I'm going to pretend you're them, okay? All of the Levi'im, the priests, were holy and should be able to do the work that the Kohens did. I mean, why should you be a lowly priest when you got the high priest? You could be one of them. Wouldn't you want to be a high priest if you were a Levite? Not just Aaron and his sons. Why should they get all the glory and we get the guts? Korach appealed to the masses and accused Moses of being a harsh dictator. They accused Moses of enriching himself at everyone's expense. They didn't need Moses and Aaron. In fact, they would probably be better off without them. They just left the land flowing with milk and honey, where life was good. Now Egypt is described as the land flowing with milk and honey. How about that? And life had gone from bad to worse ever since. The idea of being the chosen people is too hard. Who wants to be chosen? Go choose someone else. Let's go back where we came from. A leader that follows Korach's model will always concentrate mostly on himself. He will attack others. He will seek to accumulate money, perhaps by making constant appeals like a carnival pitchman, or by charging exorbitant prices for his unique and one-of-a-kind material that everyone just got to have. You got to have this stuff. And if you act now, I'll give you 50% off, but I'll quadruple the price before I do that. He or she will appeal to the masses by emphasizing the lowest common denominator that makes them all equal. Such a leader's success is defined in terms of dollars and numbers of people supporting them, not in the creation of a truly righteous, godly individuals and communities. What about Moses? Well, he never sought leadership or recognition. He would have been happy living out his life in the wilderness as a shepherd. He was doing fine. He had a heart for the people. and what was best for them. So he protected them and interceded for them even when they rebelled. He had the courage to lead them to the best rather than the easiest. He never took anything from them. He did not seek to be paid as a rabbi or anything. While being paid by the community frees the leader up, in some ways, the bondage that results gets really bad. The freedom to lead as God directs is lost because one's meals are now dependent on keeping in the good graces of the majority. And there is something very important about work, physical labor, providing for oneself and one's family that is lost when the leader no longer rubs elbows on the outside. Until after the time of Yeshua, rabbis worked and were not paid to be rabbis. Sadly, I hate to say this, but most pastors today are enslaved to the four P's: power, prestige, position, and pay. Someone just told me recently that they didn't want to work, they didn't want to get a job, because they wanted to do ministry, and they wanted to get paid for that, and that was their goal in life, even though they might lose their house, I don't know. I want you to know that when we started a DOT, I was working full-time. I worked for 16 years at the Veterans Home, and I was the business manager. It was a highly demanding job, ran all the businesses. I ran 7 departments, computer systems, everything. Hired and fired, negotiated contracts. I mean, I did it all. And I did this job at the same time for 5 years without pay when we started a DOT. And then all of a sudden I had a stroke, or a TIA, I guess you call it, mini stroke. And the doctors told me after my operation on my neck, they sucked my blood out, those vampires, and they said, you have to give up one of your jobs. And I said, well, I'll give up the congregation. I can't do that. And you all told me that you would pay me to work here. And so I gave up my career. I was going to be a nursing home administrator. That was my goal in life. And here I am today, not a nursing home administrator. Throw out that master's degree. What good was it? Gerontology. Can't even spell it. Finally, and most importantly, God's anointed Moses' leadership in a way that it was obvious to all. He operated in the realm of spiritual power that is only available to the most righteous and the humble. I'm not trying to compare myself to Moses, okay? Although, if he took that same Gallup test that I had to take about strengths, he probably would have one of the strengths that I have, which is empathy. I think Moses had empathy. What you think? All right. Men and women who follow his example and that of the prophet like him, Yeshua, will lead in ways that will build up the community and create equals that will go out and draw even more people to God through their example and their service. Authentic biblical leadership operating in the authority of God will be willing to be put to God's test as Moses was. They will not meet challenges in their own strength and human means, but will fall on their face before God to determine if there is any sin in them and to beseech God for mercy and reconciliation. God will use punishment on his people as a means of discipline to teach them to trust and obey him and his word. And God will provide authentic, empowered biblical leaders to those who seek him and put his service ahead of themselves. Are there today leaders in the body of Messiah that self-righteously seek their own glory? Leaders that are actually rebelling against the loving instructions of God while the whole time they appear to be seeking equality and justice? Throughout the ages, many of the worst sins of the people of God have arisen from within the camp, not from without. The history of God's followers is littered with stories of defiant leaders, men of renown who rebelled against God himself. Should we not learn the lesson of ancient Israel and not perish in the wilderness? Do you want to perish in the wilderness? No. This portion, this whole parasha, should give every believer and especially every leader in the body of Messiah a reason to pause and ponder the condition of their relationship to Yeshua HaMashiach, their Savior and Messiah, who was always faithful in God's house and surely was the most humblest man on the face of the earth. What is fascinating about these Korach and other failed leaders is that they had so many positive things going for them. They came from a good family with ancestors remembered for character, general obedience, and surrender to God. They're well known, they're respected, and followed by the community. They have been given a position by the Most High that few others could boast of having received. I mean, Korach, his family, they composed Psalms later on. His family that managed to survive. Samuel is descended from him, the prophet. So what went wrong with Korach? Everybody's got a black sheep in their family, right? Apparently, these men strayed from God on two counts. First, they misunderstood the idea of personal significance in servant leadership. And second, they underestimated the value God has placed today on loyalty to his designated leaders. These errors in judgment led to actions that displeased God. As always, their sin was conceived in the heart and head, then birthed in their mouth, hands, and feet. Could their errors have been detected by their followers before the rebellion? How could we detect similar problems today in those that are respected and whose sin is so easily overlooked by their own community? If one looks closely at the fruits of these leaders, one will see the bright, polished exterior was solely poisoning others from within. These leaders were malcontents, not content with their position. They were not motivated by a fervor to help God's appointed leader, Moses, and not because of a burning desire to see God at work in a new way in their midst. I hate to say it, but I think I've been appointed to be here. I didn't ask for this job. So I think I'm God's appointed leader at this place. I know. And if you're not helping me, then you don't belong here. If you're trying to further your own little thing, get out. They overlooked the smaller responsibilities that God had put within their charge, believing that bigger is more significant. They did not understand that personal significance and service comes neither from the size of a task nor the importance of the task in the eyes of others. Personal significance comes from the love, motivated desire to be obedient and faithful to our loving Father in all that He has placed in our charge, knowing that it is He alone whom you serve. Who do you serve? You don't serve me. I serve Him. I am your servant. But you serve Him. Only God, the King of Kings, is the fair and true measure of any one of us's worth and significance as a servant in His kingdom. And guess what, folks? I ain't in this for the money because I ain't getting paid very well. I was getting paid an awful lot more at that veterans home. And I'm not here because I only work on Saturdays. That's what a lot of people think. I just work on Saturdays. People around me will tell you that I am working all the time, 60, 70. I mean, my whole life is a dot. And I very rarely get a whole day off. And when I do, I sit in a car for 2.5 hours because of a rain delay in a baseball game. Which is what I did yesterday. But you know, I sat in that car with the most precious person on earth, my wife. Yeah. And we got to sit there and we had no radio. And we had no book. She said, why didn't we bring a book or a DVD player or something down? You know, we didn't think it was going to rain. Jim Flowers told us, no, it's not going to rain. So all we could do was talk to each other. Wow. And some LSU fans behind us who were partying. I think that was the only word they learned to spell in high school was LSU. Never mind. That's another story. Korach saw his personal significance, not in faithful obedience, but in the way the task was perceived as important by observers. Not only did the rebels search for personal significance and apparent importance, but they also allowed their evil motives to poison their own hearts to the point that they saw evil motives in those around them. Their eyes adjusted to the darkness of their own heart, and they accused Moses and Aaron of the same evils that which they suffered. They forgot the power of God and ascribed to Moses all the events in the Exodus from Egypt. They verbalized baseless accusations against their leaders. Their internal spiritual well was fully poisoned because they had fomented rebellion in the murmuring rather than employing careful and godly confrontation to resolve conflicts. They were thoroughly estranged from God, from whom they were seeking greater service and recognition. The Hebrew term for leader is nasi, N-A-S-I. It's often translated as prince in the scriptures. It is derived from a term that means to lift up or to raise up, such as smoke or mist rises. We used to have a parasha, what we read before, called naso, which means lift or bear up, carry. It's only like 3 weeks ago. It is a tragic irony that these who were raised up ended their lives by sliding into the pit of death. Raise yourself up, you're going down. It is a valid reminder to all who read this portion that the way up, importance, is the way down, servanthood. If you want to be important in God's kingdom, you need to go down and be a servant. And the way down, destruction, is the way up. It's called self-importance. So if you raise yourself up, you're going down. It's just destruction. Yeshua echoed this himself in Luke 14:11. Because everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but everyone who humbles himself will be exalted. This week's portion illustrates just how far the seeds of rebellion had spread in the camp of Bnei Yisrael at this time. The problem was more serious than one would imagine. In this parasha, we see how one incident of mutiny multiplied itself and resulted in the deaths of nearly 15,000 Israelites. And the 40 years of wandering, guess what? It just began. It only just begun. To quote the Carpenters. Often, we get impatient, and our pride can get in the way, as Korach's did. We think we can do things better than the people who God has established in leadership or authority, but we ignore the process of maturity God had wrought in their lives to get them there. Moses was trained by God for 40 years in Egypt to be a nasi, a leader, a prince. By being a prince, a victorious general, and the leader of the people, he was also trained by God for 40 years in the wilderness around Mount Sinai to be a true shepherd. That's 80 years before he even got started at his job. Man, we all be thinking retirement 35 years before that. He had led the children of Israel through the tribulation of the plagues, had confronted Pharaoh, had led them for a year after leaving Egypt. Korach, just getting started, man. Hey, I want to be the leader. He woke up one day. I want to be the leader. There are no shortcuts to holiness. Maturity takes a while to develop. And privilege uses to which such people are put by God takes time, probably years. God doesn't work the way we do. He doesn't want things done by June 6th or May 18th. He wants it done by some year that he's got. It takes time, probably years, of study, of patience, of prayer, and guess what else? Experience. You don't get to be standing up here unless you get some experience. You know, I didn't like getting in front of people. I used to drink myself to a stupor so I could get up in front of people just so I'm an introvert. I don't even like talking to people. I'm scared of y'all. I am. I'm an introvert. You don't ever see me talking to people. They usually come up to me to talk to me, but I don't go seeking them out. We must be slow to lay hands on anyone, for those whom God has not adequately trained will only lead to rebellion and disaster, the effects of which may take a long time to repair. I was 51 years old when I started this job. Not as old as Moses, but we don't live as long now. I didn't ask for it, nor did I want it. I had some other things going on in my life that I was happy with, but this job has grown on me. It has grown in me. If you think you can do this job better than me, come on up. I'll be glad to sit down and go out and look for a job. I can go to Walmart, wear that vest and go, "Hi, y'all, welcome to Walmart today." I can do that. That's probably the only job I can get now, being 63 years old. But, you know, I could handle that, and I would be very happy, and then, you know, get my nights off. But in Hebrews 5:4, Paul says, no human can make himself a high priest. You can't be a high priest if you ain't one. It has to come from God. You know what? First, it was the firstborns. So if you're not a firstborn, you don't belong to God, right? You can't be one of his priests. I'm a firstborn, but the Kohanim, the priests, Aaron's people, came along, the Levites, and they replaced the firstborns. So the firstborns didn't have to do that, so you didn't have to lose your firstborn son from your family. You could still keep him so he could take over the family business. But then they got rid of all them priests too because they only needed one. And his name is Yeshua. How will it be with us? Parashat Korach is very challenging to us today because it deals with God's judgment among his believing community against some rebellious leaders who seem to make sense to the people who were complaining against Moses and God. In the Berit Chadashah, in 1 Peter 4:17, for the time has come for the judgment to begin. It begins with the household of God. Yeah. Who's going to be judged first? Y'all. And if it starts with us, what will the outcome be for those who are disobeying God's good news? Toast. You like toast? If the righteous is barely delivered, where will the ungodly and sinful end up? The scripture tells us plainly that it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. Hebrews 10:31. God will judge his people, Deuteronomy 32:36. It is very important that we remember to balance God's love and mercy for us with his truth and judgment. God's judgments are discipline that leads to righteousness. His corrections are to keep us on the right path so that we do not go the way of destruction. So if we apply this parashah to our lives, we are reminded that the things that happened to the children of Israel in the desert, according to 1 Corinthians 10:6, are examples to us so that we do not lust after the evil things. All that stuff's in there for some reason. It ain't to entertain you, show you a movie. You can go see Bruce Willis if you want to do that. It's there to remind you not to do those things. Why do you think God writes that stuff down? Because he wants you to be different. Today are people who profess to belong to God, involved in sins like idolatry, sexual immorality, disobedience, and guess what? Murmuring. Murmur. If so, then we need to fall on our faces and turn from our evil ways before the judgment of God comes upon us. Proverbs 28:13, he who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy. Korach and his followers desired authority and power for themselves. Like Hasatan and his fallen angels, their pride had led them astray. You can read about that in Jude. There are many false teachers among God's people today. I will tell you that. They boast of their anointing and flatter the ears of God's people. They are sensual, soulish people who cause division. They cause division amongst God's people. And they are not led by the Ruach HaKodesh. Just like Korach, these leaders are in rebellion against God and His Torah and are leading the flock of God into judgment. As Rabbi Peter writes, not Pope Peter, Rabbi Peter, in 2 Peter 2, 1 through 3. He was a rabbi long before he became Pope. But among those people, there were also false prophets, just as there will be false teachers among you. You could be sitting next to one right now. Oh, let me give you something I just caught on the internet. You got to see this. This is cool. Oh, yeah? Is that something Rabbi Nate ever taught about? No, it's good stuff. It's all over the internet. You should read it. 5 million people have seen this and have passed it on. And they say at the bottom, pass this on. Has Rabbi Nate ever seen it? Has he passed it on? No, but you got to do it. Under false pretenses, they will introduce destructive heresies, even denying the master who brought them, and thus bring on themselves swift destruction. Many will follow their debaucheries, and because of them, the true way will be maligned. In their greed, they will exploit you with fabricated stories. Their punishment decreed long ago is not idle. Their destruction is not asleep. Guess what Jesus, I think his name, we call him Yeshua, don't we? Says in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 through 20, go in through the narrow gate. For the gate that leads to destruction is wide and broad, and many travel it. But it is a narrow gate and a hard road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Squeeze yourself into that. Beware of false prophets. I believe there's three kinds of prophets in the world, and I've said this before. There are anointed prophets that God put in the Bible, Isaiah, Jeremiah, etc., etc. There are false prophets in the Bible. Guys who just didn't say it right and their stuff didn't make it into the Bible. They're not even in the Bible. And today we have non-prophets who set themselves up as 501c3s and take your money, sell you tapes, and tell you things you want to hear. They come to you wearing sheep's clothing. Oh, I love you. But underneath they are hungry wolves. I see wolves all the time here coming to eat. I call you my sheep because I think God told me to protect you. When you come here, you become part of this flock. And I'm not saying I'm a shepherd, but I think God kind of made me one. And, you know, I watch that stuff. So when I see something that looks wrong, I'm all against it. You should see me. I get pretty excited. I know Roger hears from me. Dalma hears from me. A few others hear from me. You will recognize them by their fruit. Can people pick grapes from thorn bushes? Or figs from thistles? Likewise, every healthy tree produces good fruit, but a poor tree produces bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, or a poor tree good fruit. Any tree that does not produce good fruit is cut down and thrown in the fire. So you'll recognize them by their fruit. We must heed Yeshua's warning and be careful to discern and wisely choose the right path to follow. We must always be fruit testers so that the false prophet will not come in while we are unaware to mislead and kill and destroy the people. Jude 22, rebuke some who are disputing. Save others, snatching them out of the fire, and yet to others show mercy, but with fear, hating even the clothes stained by their vices. Now to the one who can keep you from falling and set you without defect and full of joy in the presence of his Shekinah, to God alone, our deliverer, through Yeshua the Messiah, our Lord, be glory, be majesty, power, and authority before all time, now and forever. I am done. Thank you.